Back in her loft, Anya stood gazing at her couch by the light of a lamp with a black metal shade. She had changed to russet sweats, a green t-shirt, and running shoes.
Do I really spend too much time here with my papers and artifacts?
Of course not, she assured herself. She trotted the globe almost incessantly, both for Chasing History's monsters and on adventures of her own that were far less publicized. But the evenings she spent on her sofa reading papers and arcane journals, not to mention alt.archaeology and alt.archaeology.esoterica, struck her now as sadly symptomatic of a major hole in her life. She couldn't escape it, even by racing around the world. She had to get off this track, and in a hurry. Her eyes strayed to the end of the couch. The emerald pendant Garin had lent to her that night on the ocean venture was strung over the heavy wood frame like a cheap Mardi Gras trinket from New Orleans. He had insisted she keep it. When she tried to demur, saying it made her feel uncomfortable, he only laughed.
Our destinies are entwined anyway, Anya. A bauble, more or less, makes no difference either way, don't you see?
Garin had had a point, Anya had to admit. She had hung it there in plain sight, almost defiantly. She figured in the event anyone burgled her loft, they'd leave it alone, figuring it had to be paste and gold paint. She reached for the remote. Turning to a station that was showing a documentary on sea turtles, innocuous enough, she opened her notebook computer and went to download her email. Shards of glass rained down from her skylight. Men dressed all in black came sliding on ropes into her living room. Anya pushed the computer off onto the couch and leapt to her feet. Her rational mind was gridlocked. Fortunately, her body had long since learned how to react to immediate danger without relying on her brain. The sword appeared in her hand almost as if by its own accord. The men that had emerged from the shattered skylight in a downward roil of humid air were dressed in black, from boots to masks. They carried what looked like submachine guns. Two stood in the middle of her hardwood floor. They turned to her. With her left hand, Anya scooped up a heavy fossil of a large chambered nautilus and threw it at the one on her left. He raised a black-clad arm to protect his face. Whether the heavy stone broke the bone or not, he reeled back off balance. His partner started to lift his weapon. She slashed him diagonally across the neck. He fell back, clutching at his blood-spurting throat. Taking the sword's hilt in both hands, Anya swung with all of her fury. Her blade caught the other man at the juncture of neck and shoulder and bit deep into his torso. The man fell onto his masked face. It occurred to her that if this was some SWAT team, she was in big trouble. In her anger, she didn't care. Beyond the light cast by her lamp, she saw two more figures descending from the skylight's jagged blackness. Her heart sank. Two more men rushed at her.
How many of you are there?
Anya parried an overhand sword cut from the nearer man on her left. The realization struck her. There was no SWAT team anywhere in the United States whose members carried short swords. She swung right, dropping her weight as she did so. Her sword slid across the other's edge and whipped free. The second man, trying to close on her right, danced back to avoid its downward slashing tip. She went low, scything out with her right leg in a spinning sweep. She completed her spin and slashed up and right with her sword. The second man hacked at her. The intruder stared in stunned amazement at the stump of his sword blade, cut off clean from the hilt. Another intruder vaulted over the man she'd swept. She spun back into him, slashing him across the torso. He fell across his comrade on the floor, even as that man tried to regain his feet. Anya fired her right leg in a back kick into the man whose sword she had broken. He staggered back. Swordsmen surged toward her. How many, she couldn't even tell. Motion yanked her eye upward above them. A man was sliding down a rope and aiming his machine pistol at her. She turned, darted a few steps, and dove over the back of the sofa. Anya was surprised by the report of her assailant's weapon. No bullets punched through the sofa after her. Her assailants left her little time to puzzle over that. She sensed someone looming over the couch. She turned, drew her legs in, and kicked the heavy sofa over, back to front. The top of it slammed into the man's thighs, knocking him down and pinning him. Anya got her legs under her and launched herself in a mad sprint the several steps to her kitchen. Spice jars on a metal rack hung from the wall shattered around her. At the kitchen's far end, a window led out onto a fire escape. Expecting at any instant to feel bullet impacts hammering her back, she yanked the window open and swung herself legs first onto the landing. She went down the first few metal steps on all fours like a monkey. She was scarcely aware of having released the sword back into the otherwhere. There were just too many intruders to fight. Her only hope lay in flight. Though the rungs and rail were slick with an ever-renewed coat of pigeon droppings, she sped down them. Anya released the last stage of the fire escape. She pounded down the last few steps and dropped the several feet to the alley below. For a dazed interval, Anya wandered the fever-humid nighttime streets, ducking in and out of alleys and trying to avoid the lights and other pedestrians as much as possible. She did not want to be seen. She wasn't sure whether or not she was soaked with blood. Eventually, she found a recessed doorway in a dark alley and simply slumped in it. Should anyone see her, with any luck, they would take her for another of the homeless who haunted Brooklyn. The intensity of the emotion pouring out of her amazed Anya and scared her all over again, but she knew better than to try to fight it. At last, she vented enough terror and anger and despair to get control of herself. She sucked in great breaths of garbage-flavored alley air. It contained just enough oxygen to begin to clear her head. What happened? She asked herself. She shook her head as tears stung her eyes again. There simply weren't any answers, not rational ones. Misdirected no-knock raids, based on lies from paid informants eager to pass information onto their handlers so they would get paid, or on something as banal as a mistyped address, were becoming a disgracefully commonplace event across the country. But this was no police raid, not with swords. Who used those kinds of weapons? In the course of her travels around the world, she had run afoul of any number of scary people. If they, or their survivors, had identified her and tracked her back to Brooklyn, an all-out attack on her residence would certainly not be beyond their moral scope. But in this day and age, who attacked like that? She put her face in her hands for a moment, then smoothed her hair back. It didn't make any sense. If they wanted to kill her, why not just open fire through the skylight? Or shoot her as they rappelled down from the ceiling? Whoever attacked her had wanted to capture her alive. The thought gave her a fresh set of the shivers.
All right. I have lots of questions I don't have any answers to right now. So the question I need to ask is, what do I do now?
She stood and took quick stock of herself. She was bruised in various places, mostly, she guessed, from diving over the sofa. She couldn't find any punctures, though, and nothing seemed broken. She had blood spatters on her arms and suggestive sticky spots on her face. She wiped those away as best she could with her hands, or at least smeared them enough so that they wouldn't be readily identifiable, she hoped. As for the spots on her clothes, she could do little except be glad she wore blue jeans. Her tan short-sleeve shirt was less fortunate. She started walking again, with no particular destination in mind. She had no cell phone, no money, no credit cards, and no apartment keys. She could probably rouse Wally, the building superintendent, out of bed to let her in. He was a decent old guy. Of course, he might have some uncomfortable questions if she turned up knocking on his door at the darkest hour of the morning, looking as if she had just engaged in a sword fight with a bunch of guys dressed like ninjas. She knew she could be quite persuasive, but she had her limits. And she did not want him becoming suspicious of her.